Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Dorothea Brand said, "Act as if it were impossible to fail." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who does act as if it were impossible to fail. Today's Playmakers company develops an anatomical copy of a patient's natural tooth. With us today is a CEO who said, "I love it when people tell me that something can't be done. It drives me to prove them wrong." This great playmaker is Lee Ellermeyer. Lee is co-founder and CEO of Replicate Dental Technologies. Now, Replicate Dental Technologies, formerly Natural Dental Implants, is a developer and manufacturer of the Replicate System, a new approach to tooth replacement. Natural Dental Implants AG is a dental technology and services company with a Replicate Immediate Tooth Replacement System for replacing non-functional teeth with anatomically shaped prostheses rather than surgical dental implants. Prior to joining RDT, Lee co-founded and served as CEO of Lingual Care, a Dallas, Texas-based dental technology company that developed and marketed customized invisible orthodontic braces that go behind the teeth with operations in the U.S., Germany, and Mexico. Lingual Care was purchased by the 3M company in November 2007. We're going to talk medical here. Welcome, Lee, to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, let me ask you this. How does a high school dropout from Nebraska develop and run companies in the medical field?
Well, there are a few steps in between. So I got a pretty kind of rough start in life, I would say. And my father died when I was 16, and I was at the time estranged from my mother. And I ended up dropping out of high school, tried to go to college, took the GED. That didn't work. Ended up working as a short order cook in Hastings, Nebraska, at the Clark Hotel. I reached a point in my life when I was about 19 when I realized that there had to be something more for me than being a short order cook in Hastings, Nebraska. And right around that same time, my mother had gotten remarried. And her husband, a guy by the name of Wayne Maycumber, had a big ranch out in western Nebraska. And on a whim, he asked me if I wanted to come and work on the ranch to make money to go back to college. And I didn't know anything about running a ranch, working on a ranch. I couldn't even drive a stick shift.
Now, was this before or after you went back to high school, or did you get a GED?
I got a GED. And I thought, you know, this is an opportunity. And I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself at that time. And I didn't know what I was doing. But something inside me just said, you got to go try. So I showed up on the ranch, and Wayne, bless his heart, took me by the hand and taught me that I really could do anything I put my mind to. I could, you know, link up hydraulics on a tractor. I could back up a truck with a horse trailer attached, which that did take some practice. And it did really two things for me. Not only did it give me an opportunity to just pause in my life and do something completely outside of anything I'd ever imagined. The ranch was in the middle of nowhere, Arthur County, Nebraska, 75 miles from the nearest pizza. And I was alone. I had a lot of time to think. I had a lot of time to read. I had a lot of time to consider what my options were. And I did decide I wanted to go back to college. I wanted to give it another shot. And so I really attribute, you know, where I am today, not just to that decision, but to Wayne's decision to take me on and to mentor me.
Well, what I heard from that is, A, you developed a work ethic that you probably didn't have before. Not that you weren't a worker.
Not a dawn to dusk work ethic, that's for sure.
And you began, it was almost, as I was thinking about this, it sounds like it was almost your boot camp. It was a boot camp for you to really knock some sense into you, to help you make a decision about what you want to do in your future. Is that correct?
That's a very fair assessment. You know, the other thing, it was having someone believe in me, having someone trust me, you know, with expensive equipment and animals and to go do things. I mean, the ultimate test was I started in May, and by December, my stepbrother was graduated from college at the University of Nebraska, And Wayne and the whole family decided to go to the graduation and leave me in charge of the ranch for 3 days.
And this is about the age of 19, 20?
This is the age of 19. And so I've got to feed 6 tons of hay and take care of, 7,000 acres in the snow. And the first day, of course, I killed the tractor out in the middle of nowhere. And the thing had such a bad battery, you couldn't start it. In the morning to get the thing going, you have to spray ether in the carburetor, say a prayer, and take the battery charger off. And so I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And it was just that moment when I thought, okay, the cows haven't been fed. I got to figure this out. I've got to figure out how to get this going. I'm the only person out there. So I did. I walked a mile and a half back to the house and called a neighbor and got someone to pull start the tractor. And, I didn't get every cow fed till the end of the day. But it was really just that moment of realizing I could do something that I 6 months ago had thought would be impossible. And that changed me as a person.
You did that how long?
I worked on the ranch from May into January when I left to go to college in El Paso, Texas.
May till January. So you had about 7 months of...
7 months of boot camp.
Of boot camp to do that. And then you went to the University of Nebraska. Is that correct?
No. I went to the University of Texas in El Paso.
Why UTEP?
It's kind of a funny story. I decided one day, okay, this is the day I'm going to go and figure out how to go to college. So I drove to the bookstore in North Platte, Nebraska. And there was like Barron's Guide to Colleges. So I pulled it off the shelf. I think it was like a B. Dalton bookseller, at the mall. No internet back then. And I just went through the book and started looking at pictures of campuses. And then I see this picture of UTEP and this kind of crazy Bhutanese architecture. And I thought, wow, it's in the corner of Texas and Mexico and New Mexico. It couldn't be further from Nebraska. It looks really cool. And based on nothing more than that, I wrote down the admissions phone number and then called them and had them send me an application. So I'd like to say that there was some great design there, but it really wasn't.
Well, you got to Texas from Western Nebraska, but you had mentioned prior before the show started that you also went to Nebraska for a while, for 1 year too, didn't you?
I did. So after I dropped out of high school, I worked for a bit and I took the GED and I went to Lincoln for a year. And I just failed miserably. At that point in my life, I wasn't mature. I partied far too much. I didn't have any parental guidance or supervision at that point. And it was a disaster. And I was really defeated. I came back to Hastings, my hometown, with my tail between my legs, took that job as a short order cook, and spent about a year and a half just trying to figure out what I could possibly do when Wayne offered me that lifeline.
Probably the best thing that happened to you to get you going was your mother marrying Wayne and offer yes. all that to happen.
That's right. That's right.
So you went to University of Texas, El Paso.
I did.
You have now been CEO of a couple of different medical firms in the oral business. Mm-hmm. How did you get then from there to getting into the medical field?
Sure. After college, I went and got an MBA at Thunderbird School of Global Management. Coming out of that, I took my first job in Silicon Valley. At the time I was getting out of school, I thought I wanted to be a commodities trader. That seemed like a really cool thing, working in Chicago, and I wanted to work for this company that specialized in all things related to grain.
Brings you back to
Nebraska.
Nebraska, then.
Right. Okay. So they had their, their grain elevators and transportation, and so I was really excited about that opportunity. And out of the blue, I got a call from this software company in Berkeley inviting me to come and interview for a marketing position. And, I was a poor graduate student. I'd never been to California. It's summer in Phoenix. I'm thinking, hey, it's a free trip. I'm going to go, right? And over the very first plate of Thai food I'd ever eaten, a guy by the name of Brian Doherty, the CEO of GeoWorks, convinced me that his little software company could defeat Microsoft in the operating system game. And being the naive kid from Nebraska, I believed him. And I caught the fever. I wanted to be part of Brian's journey, this big grand venture. And they offered me stock in the company. And so I completely let go of the commodities trading and went to California. And that experience got me started in startup companies in early stage, right? So I started in software, and in about 2000, I took my first job in a healthcare technology company. So that's how I transitioned. But I was in tech for software development for 10 years.
Then Brian must have been a mentor to you in terms of, if nothing else, understanding what a startup CEO needs to do. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. The energy at that company was just infectious. And it started at Brian and it worked its way down to the other people who were there. It wasn't like a job. It was like a mission. You know, everybody came to work with an intention to do something big that day and to help each other. It was very collaborative. It was very different than what I imagined work would be. And it was certainly very different than what I'd experienced when I went to interview with the commodities trading firm and saw how their people worked. It was not hierarchical. It was a very flat organization. Everybody had an opportunity to contribute. And that really resonated with me.
Sounds like some companies that do that today, they've picked that up from Silicon Valley to make it a flat structure, and everybody participates, everybody's excited. So coming back to what you're doing, it was more than just about the money. It was the excitement of developing and building something from scratch. Is that correct?
Absolutely. There's something about creating something from nothing that is pretty exciting to me. I know it's not exciting to everybody because I've talked to people who think, gosh, why would you take on that kind of risk? You know, because there is a lot of risk when you start a company. There's a lot of risk when you join a startup company. You don't know, you know, are we going to make it to payroll next month? Are we going to go down? Is this going to be a bankruptcy? Is it going to be an IPO? And you live on this edge of, I'm going to be rich, I'm going to be broke, you know, and you don't know. But I loved the idea that I could make a difference in that environment. And that's kind of how I felt on the ranch with Wayne, too, you know, and also being able to see your work. And if you spend a whole day putting up a new fence, at the end of the day, you got a new fence. You know, you can really see what you did. It's not always that way in software development, but you do see your creation. And I think that that's, for me, what makes me want to get up in the morning.
Then how did you end up co-founding LinguaCare?
So I took a job at a company here in Dallas called Orametrics in 2000 that had been founded by a guy in Germany named Rutger Rubert. And Rutger is a prolific inventor. He's a mechanical engineer, was also a tool maker in the old guild system in Germany. And Rutger had this idea of bringing industrial automation into dentistry. And when I interviewed with the company, again, it was 2000, there was a lot going on. You know, the market was hot, there's all these new startups, lots of different opportunities. So I'm talking to several different companies. But something about that dental technology made sense to me. You know, oh, we're going to make, you know, high-tech braces, basically, is what we were doing, using 3D imaging and robotics and software, because that was something that was going to touch people. I mean, when you're working in software, as I had, I did do some consumer products, but the last few years was very enterprise-based. And, you know, trying to explain it to my mom that I'm making, you know, testing tools for SAP implementations and quality management, she has no clue. But when I said, oh, yeah, we're making these really cool high-tech braces, you know.
Then she understood.
Yeah. So it seemed like something that really touched people, right, that would really make a difference in people's lives. And I think that's the attraction a lot of people feel for healthcare, is that you do make something that touches people's lives. So I met Rutger there. That company went through some ups and downs, and we reached a point where it just became clear that that wasn't going to be our future. And we had another idea, which was to start a company from scratch, making these braces that went behind your teeth. At the time, there was a company out there called Invisalign, or Align Technology, made a product called Invisalign that was becoming very popular for adults. So it was becoming clear that adults wanted straight teeth, but they didn't want to wear conventional braces. And that's the market that we went after.
That was probably a very exciting time for you, too. Exciting in doing something that hadn't been done, that you had to really stretch yourself. And it probably brought back a lot of what you learned beginning on the ranch, but this was now something that was yours.
Yeah. You know, it was exciting and it was scary, too, stepping into that. My entrepreneurial experience at these other companies was always, I was one level removed. You know, I was not the person asking for the first dollar. There's a big difference between raising $5 million in one and raising $1. And so that was a real challenge. And being able to just get up every morning and tell myself, this is going to be the day. This is going to be the day I've got to, you know. And sometimes if you look out as an entrepreneur at the whole landscape, it becomes very difficult to move. It can be paralyzing. So I had things I would do, like I would make a stick-on note with just three things that I was going to get done that day. Just three things.
You had to focus, because I'm sure there were hundreds of things you wanted to do, but you had to focus on those key imperative items to get done.
I mean, one of my favorite sayings I would say to employees is, it's not what you know, it's when you know it. And if I don't need to know that today, I'm not going to freak out about it today.
And you were in a tunnel with tunnel vision, with blinders on, getting done what you need to get done. What's interesting, I want to find out more about Replicate Dental Technologies. When I was growing up, my dad had dentures. He had very poor teeth, didn't take care of them. He kept telling us kids that we really need to focus on taking care of our teeth. As I did some research on your website, and if anybody would like to take a look at it, it's, I believe, replicatetooth.com.
Yes.
If you have to lose a tooth, now you can have a prosthesis that is identical to that tooth, and you'd never know, I would think, along the way. Tell us about that, how you came up with that, and how it works.
Well, I would like to take credit for the idea, but I can't do that. Rutger, who was my co-founder at Lingual Care, also my co-founder at Natural Dental Implants, he had that idea. He was in a dental chair one day and had to have a tooth removed. And the dentist said, well, you can get an implant or you can get a bridge. Or, and he had the tooth in his hand. He said, you know, there's kind of this funky crack in it. Maybe I could just glue that together and put it back in your mouth, which he ended up doing. And as Rutger's laying in the chair, he thought, well, okay, that's probably not going to last forever, but what if you could use a better material? What if we could make a copy of the tooth and not have to go through the more traumatic process of a dental implant, which requires drilling into your jawbone? So that was really the genesis of the company. And, you know, Rutger had this idea, started working on the IP, the intellectual property, and then, you know, my part is figuring out how to finance it and ultimately sell it.
My understanding from looking at your website is it still needs to be in your mouth to make this happen, because once it's pulled, a identical replication of the tooth is made. Is that correct?
So actually, before your tooth is pulled, mm-hmm. we take a 3D x-ray of your mouth and a dental impression, and that data is combined in the computer, and we make a copy of your tooth. Or I hate to say exact copy, because sometimes there are anomalies with your tooth that you don't want to copy, like you've got a divergent root or there's some other anatomical problems. So we make a very close copy of your tooth. And then the day your tooth is extracted, the dentist removes it and ours is placed in that same appointment. So you leave with a tooth in your mouth.
Correct me if I'm wrong from reading your website. It's about a 6-month process, is it? Because you have a temporary crown on there to hold it in until it sits in there correctly?
The tooth is actually made to be a little bit wider at the bottom of the bone socket. So it goes in and it's tapped in and it gets stability from compression of the bone. Okay. The little cover, there's a temporary that goes over the top. It's not connected to the actual tooth. It just sits above it and protects it while it heals in. So after it's healed, you remove that, put the final crown on. Depending on the doctor, sometimes it's 3 months, 4 months. We always say 6 months, because if you give a lower number, someone's going to cut that down anyway. For instance, your bone in your upper jaw heals faster than in your lower jaw. So
if somebody would like to find out more about this, they obviously can go to the website, but it would be their doctor contacting Replicate to learn how to do this for the patient if they haven't done that before. Is that correct?
So we are currently working on our FDA clearance. So we don't have it in the United States yet. In the European Union, yes, they would, you know, talk to their doctor. We're hoping that, you know, in the next number of months, we will have it available here in the United States. So yeah, they could tell their doctor about it. We even have a data sheet they can download and email to their doctor. It's a PDF, or give it to them and say, hey, have you thought about this? Because we do today, even though we're not available in the U.S., we get a lot of requests from patients here and doctors here who are very interested in the system.
I hope you get that going very quickly.
Thank you.
There was a time in your life where you lacked a lot of confidence. We kind of talked about that without mentioning confidence along the way, but you've now written a book, Finding the Exit. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. Tell us about that.
As a kid, I was in love with the library and the bookmobile, because we had the bookmobile in Nebraska too, Hastings Public Library. I always wanted to be an author. And I never had the time or really desire to be a starving artist, I have to say that. So I thought about it a lot, and I always wrote. After I sold Lingual Care, I decided that I wanted to take a step forward into writing. And I was reading an article in a magazine, in all places, the dentist's office, about this woman named Joyce Maynard, who's a writer. She's pretty well known. And Joyce was hosting a writing workshop in Guatemala on Lake Atitlan. And I thought, so we needed to send in a writing sample to see if it would be accepted or not. And I did. And Joyce accepted me into her little writing retreat of 12 writers on the lake. And so I journeyed to Guatemala, and I'd been there before, so that part wasn't scary to me. And I did an additional private session with her, and I did a private session with her, and she's the first person who told me that I could be a writer. She looked at my stuff and she said, I know I've been very critical of everybody's work, and I just want you to know that you have the natural talent, not to brag, but it really was this moment for me where I thought, okay, I could do this. And so I decided to write about something that I knew. And that was another recommendation from Joyce. She said, the first book you write should be the book that only you can write.
And this sounds almost autobiographical. Is that correct?
It is. Yeah.
It's about what you've gone through.
It's about
to get to where you are.
Exactly. It's about my journey through childhood. I mean, one of the things that I didn't mention, right before my father died, he'd been in the real estate business. He owned Sonic Drive-Ins, and which he bought only because he loved the Frito pie and wanted to have it in Hastings. Storage units, hotels, apartments, and it's the late 70s. So he is completely over-leveraged when the 22% interest rates that hit after Jimmy Carter, people who've lived through that time remember it vividly. Others don't really understand the terror of what, an adjustable rate mortgage was like in the late 70s and early 80s. And my dad was going broke. So to stave off the payments, he started sending money between banks in Nebraska, Kansas, and Iowa, floating money that wasn't there. And my first day of my junior year of high school, I came home and my father told me, be careful what you say on the phone. The FBI came to my office today. We probably are being recorded. And then 6 months later, he died of a heart attack.
This must have been very traumatic for everybody.
It was very traumatic. And the reason that I bring it up in this context is that was the biggest hurdle for me to start my own company, was that my father's decisions had basically, to save this business, I mean, he had gone to great lengths, had destroyed our family, had killed him, had definitely put my life on a really difficult course, and believing that I could make it when he couldn't. And he was someone that I admired greatly. So yeah, the book is about starting and selling Lingual Care, but it's also about dealing with those things that come up from your past. Because, at the end of the day, as an entrepreneur, you bring everything with you. You bring your fear, you bring your insecurity, you bring your love, right? I mean, I believe that companies are born of love. You have to really fall in love with an idea and be willing to ride the rocky road with it to get it to a place where it becomes an actual going concern, an enterprise that somebody else can take on.
Well, two questions then. Where can someone find out more about your book?
So my book is called Finding the Exit, and you can buy it on Amazon. So if you just search Finding the Exit, I think that it's a great book. I've had good feedback from people, both even from parents who said, gosh, my kid got a rough start and reading your book made me feel like maybe they're going to be okay. From younger people who are interested in entrepreneurship who said, wow, if you can make it through this, I think I can do it too. So, and that's really why I wrote it. It was you know, the realization of two big goals. One was becoming an author, and the second was telling a story that's a little bit unconventional from a female entrepreneur to let the generation of girls behind me know that it doesn't matter where you start. It just matters where you finish.
And you can start as a ranch hand and be successful.
That's right.
And Replicate Dental Technologies, where can someone find out more about that?
You can go to our website at replicatetooth.com. As I said, we're currently going through the FDA process, and we hope to be in the U.S. market soon.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. You are definitely a playmaker.
Thank you.
Playmaker is somebody that makes things happen, and you are doing that. We've just been speaking with Lee Ellermeyer. Lee is co-founder and CEO of Replicate Dental Technologies. Thank you all for listening to us. As I said, this has been a great show. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we'll be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.